afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. It's Friday. Hallelujah. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Does anybody else think it was a very long week? Friday was October 6th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
It was a long week, and Friday is finally here. And we had some... It was a great week here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading, and to the point where I took my time off on Friday from the morning program that I do, Al, and was able to get a lot of things done. So we're here today. We're here now at 4 o'clock Eastern Time on Financial Survival and gold today. Let's take a peek at gold. Gold today was up $6.20 at $1,275. You have silver up 19 cents at $16.87. Platinum was down one at $917. And palladium was down big 22 at $922. So that was down about 2.25%. The USDX today was a little weaker, down 0.08 at 93.82, with crude oil off 145 at 49.34. And the paper markets today, you had, just a few points to the negative. I mean, I think it was down 20, 30 all day, and they brought it all the way back to negative 3. You just can't go into the weekend with a negative Dow. So 22,771. It's even hard to say anymore. The NASDAQ was up 4 at 6,590. The S&P was down 2 at 2,549. So they did keep it together today after the number of workers on the U.S. payrolls declined last month for the first time since 2010, they tell us, that showed payrolls fell 33,000. Now, yesterday we talked about this, and, you know, we knew they'd play a little bit of shenanigans on us because of the hurricanes, but by this one capital management firm out of New York, they did say you would see some sort of decline in that number because of the hurricanes, but they weren't anticipating that much. They said less than half the average of 182,000 rise since the start of last year. They calculated that the gap for those states, Florida, that were hit by the hurricane, Florida, Texas, Louisiana, and Georgia, was about 55,000 jobs going back to the start of last year. So that's a big cry from what was estimated to what really came in. So just a little interesting note there. We'll have to play it through. A lot of them are saying, oh, well, let's wait till October 20th, and that way the states report their numbers, and we'll get a better idea of exactly how the hurricanes did affect these numbers. But if you really believe you're going to get the truth, well, and we're heading into holiday season, and I got some numbers on those owls, on companies that will be hiring for positions for the holiday. I think I have it here, but so there
was. Are you
talking
about for Thanksgiving, or are you talking
the
about
holidays,
for the whole thing, Christmas,
the
whole thing?
Yes, the whole holiday. In fact, Amazon they actually started, and it's interesting because they actually started hiring for the season, the holiday season, in June, and so. And it kind of makes you wonder what type of how much of an impact it's actually had on some of the numbers that we've seen these past couple of months. And so that was, I don't think there was really anything interesting coming out of that. Restaurants and bars, you know, they had a drop of 105,000 in payrolls. Yeah, but the summer's over. Kids are back in school. So vacations are over, so it's not really a surprise. The U6 or underemployment rate fell to 8.3% from 8.6%. This measure includes part-time workers who prefer a full-time position. You know, so then, you know, they're all a little bit unusual numbers, and so we'll have to wait until this next hurricane goes through to see what type of an impact that might have, but I think it'll be a fairly mild impact. Hurricane Nate. But what's interesting, Nate. It's Tropical Storm Nate right now. But they believe by the time it gets to the Gulf, it'll churn up into a Hurricane 1. So fairly mild. And, you know, they do expect, you know, some rain and so forth and, you know, maybe some higher winds. But we'll just have to wait and see. But what's interesting, and this is, I'm going to set this up. President Trump, he's proposed ending federal flood insurance for new homes in areas most at risk of flooding. A change that could curtail new construction in vast parts of Florida, Louisiana, and along the eastern seaboard. It would radically overhaul the program that was created in 1968 to help protect homeowners who live along coasts or near rivers. This idea was sent to the White House, to Congress, from Donald Trump. Home builders, I guess it was done once before. Home builders don't like it. They say it's going to stifle the economy. But your climate activists, they love it. You know, they think it's a smart idea. Mick Mulvaney, the director of White House Office of Management and Budget, sent a letter to Congress calling for changes to the taxpayer-subsidized National Flood Insurance Program, which is $25 billion in debt. Mulvaney's proposals include preventing homes built in flood plans after 2020. And but here comes the interesting part. I have issues with this, and I'll tell you why I have issues. This article goes on and it talks about, you know, all of the flooding, you know, Puerto Rico, Florida, the money and everything. Lawmakers are facing this deadline. I think this has to be decided on by December 8th to reauthorize the program and as part of an emergency aid package for Puerto Rico, Florida, and Texas. Trump asked Congress to write off $16 billion the program owes the U.S. Treasury.
Well,
I find that interesting.
That's real interesting.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it parallels what we've heard out of Trump relative to Puerto Rico a couple of days ago, where he was talking about just canceling their debt.
Yes.
Which is surprising. I wouldn't expect anybody to be canceling debt. They can't cancel debt without also canceling the correlative bonds.
But what's going to happen is, though, this is to reauthorize an aid package. There's no number on how much they're looking to, you know, propose in this aid package for these two states and territory. So are they going to, you know, give $100 billion and, you know, with that $100 billion pay off the $16 billion?
But that doesn't even make
any sense, because then it would still, you know. So I just found that really interesting, just to write off $16 billion.
Yeah, billion here, billion there. It's no big deal. We're talking trillions
now. But it's a start.
Melody, we got to move ahead. We're no longer in the world of millions or even billions. We're in the world of trillions. And who knows, another year or two we'll be in quadrillions. You have to kind of keep up with the magnitude of the money we're talking about.
You know, I'm not quite sure. You know, I don't think the government should be in, you know, flood insurance business. That was taken away from the insurance companies. You know, let the insurance companies provide the flood insurance, but they're just, you know, no one provides it, and it's, you know, it costs you more than your home. So, I mean, I get all that. I don't think government should provide flood insurance to people. But also, if it begins to restrict this development along the coast, because people no longer have flood insurance, that leaves it open to the developers that can afford it. And they can put such buildings in, you know, they can build the buildings to the degree they have the money to build the buildings that, you know, they don't get affected by the floods anyway, maybe the first level. But, you know, you can have a Cat 10 and, you know, maybe it wouldn't even damage some of those buildings along the coast that's, you know, with their steel structures and so forth. But so, again, it's the coast is left open to the wealthy and to the development of these multi-resorts. And I'm not going to say, like, Trump resorts, but, you know, it's just, I'm just saying, folks.
Well, you could, it's easier to say, like, Trump resorts as opposed to, like, Obama resorts. I don't think Obama has any resorts. Maybe golf courses, but no resorts.
But anyway, I thought that was kind of also interesting about they'd be wiping away the $16 billion in debt.
Well, I don't know what to say about any of it. I mean, it's can't be paid. I mean, maybe they've just reached a point where they're finally admitting some of the debt can't be paid, so why waste your time trying to pay it? Let's just cancel some of it. I'm not sure what they're... You know, but we've talked about it on the program a number of times. Debt can't be paid and it can't be canceled, in my opinion. What are you going to do with the debt? Well, they're apparently trying to prove me wrong, at least in a little bit of regard. They're saying we're canceling some of it. We're canceling a little bit here and a little bit there. That surprises me.
Michigan-based Whirlpool has scored a trade victory that could allow President Trump to limit the number of washing machines that are sold in the U.S. by Samsung and LG. The U.S. International Trade Commission voted 4-0 in Whirlpool's favor yesterday, ruling that a surge of washing machines from Samsung and LG have seriously injured domestic manufacturers. Whirlpool filed this petition with the ITC in May, describing Samsung and LG as serial violators of U.S. trade law and seeking protection under Section 201 of the Trade Act of 1974. Mr. Trump has about 2 months to consider the panel's advice. Samsung said it was disappointed with the commission's decision and warned that import limits would affect plans to build a new plant in South Carolina. We believe the safeguard remedies should not discriminate in favor of one group of U.S.-based workers over another and should not negatively impact a fair appliance marketplace for consumers. LG pretty much said the same thing. We're going to pull out possibly. If they impose the restrictions on, it's going to hurt consumers by raising prices and decreasing choices. They are currently building a washing machine plant in Tennessee, and so the move could jeopardize U.S. investment and jobs. And Whirlpool has accused the South Korean industrial giants of unfair trade practices in the past. Well, maybe we don't have to protect South Korea anymore. And so that's kind of interesting to see. In fact, there was a petition filed during the Obama administration and 2013 and 2015, and the government upheld the complaints and slapped duties on the machines. And so Whirlpool did this new petition because they said they've been able to dodge the duties by relocating production facilities to Vietnam and Thailand. So,
you know, it's really hard. It's hard to believe this in some regards, that it's so that the cost of tariffs, for example, or taxes or whatever they're laying on these things are so significant that it's cheaper to rebuild a plant in another country. All right? You would think the plants are mounted on wheels where they can just tow them down the road. All right? Move into another county in another state in another country. All right? And you can build your washing machines there. And you can save. How much can you save? You wouldn't think that would be worth the cost of moving your manufacturing facility. And yet, apparently, it is worth the cost of moving your manufacturing facility. That is strange. You know, you would think you set up an assembly line to build these, whatever the product happens to be, and you would suppose, I would suppose at least, that the assembly line is supposed to work for the next 20 years to get your money out of it. But they can apparently abandon one in South Korea, forget that, we'll build a new one in Vietnam in order to beat American tariffs. I'm surprised. All right? I probably shouldn't be, but I am. I'm surprised.
Well, pulling plants out of the U.S. is their threat. Well, we'll just not build our plants anymore. We'll just go to Thailand. So,
well, the other thing is this.
But you know, and you got to remember, you just wonder how the subsidies that come from the states. They're not going to get that in Vietnam. So it's just a threat. You know, it's just a threat. Whether they do that or not is one thing, but it is, you know, they're just trying to position their strength.
You know, to keep I don't know. Maybe they're just making, crying wolf. If you don't let us sell our... But this is a strange situation because now I am in favor of tariffs. Mm-hmm. All right? I'm basically in favor of tariffs, but still you look at this and this sounds like what they're doing is trying to protect not just American jobs, but American corporations. Whirlpool doesn't want to compete with South Korea, with South Korean washing machines. Whirlpool wants to keep making them here in this country. And I'm not against that, that's for sure, provided that they're paying an adequate wage to the people that are working in the American plant.
And the prices are higher.
But the prices are higher. And when they say that South Korea is coming in, there's been a surge, what they mean is South Korea has been selling washing machines at a lower price in this country. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, you've got what's good for consumers. On the other hand, you've got what's good for Whirlpool. And the people that are most concerned with deciding what they're going to do here seem to be ruling in favor of the corporation, but it's not clear that their ruling is going to help consumers. If that helps laborers, fine. That's fine with me. But it is complex, and I can look at it, and it's one of those things you have to be Solomon to kind of work this out. You know, which way is, how do we make something that's fair here and reasonable and not just serving special interests, but what's the best choice for the majority of the people? And it's not clear.
And what's interesting, too, is everybody's there, oh, Whirlpool is a U.S. company and so forth. 80% that they manufacture here in the United States stays in the United States. Doesn't mean that, you know, the other, you know, we're not supplying China with washing machines. We're not supplying, they have other manufacturing plants and corporate offices spread around all the world, and in each district, I would say, for lack of better explanation, each district has their manufacturing and their headquarters. So, you know, why can't we build machines here and ship them overseas and let them buy our product?
Well, it's a question of price and the rest of that sort of thing. But blah, blah, blah. All right, let's take a break for a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs.
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment real quick. We were talking about the payroll report in the first segment of the program, and we were talking about the holidays. Walmart, they won't be hiring for help. They're going to meet its need for the extra work during the season, during the holiday season, by giving existing employees more hours. This could be a sign of the tightening labor market. It's been difficult for employers to fill open position. Last year, Walmart hired 60,000 seasonal workers. So with Walmart being the nation's largest private sector employer, to make jobs there more attractive and to cut down on turnover, they're just giving more hours to the people that are already there so they can make a little more money. And that's probably the way it should be if they can handle the influx of the additional shoppers and so forth. Kohl's.
I'm going to have to pack a lunch when you go to Walmart. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lunch,
that's what's
a dinner,
happen.
Something. Wear a pack. Take your survival stuff with you. You may be there for a while. Snickers bars. Pack a Snickers bar. You may be there for a while.
But Kohl's, they're not going to reveal what they're looking to do for seasonal hires. They're not disclosing a number.
What do you think that means?
I don't know. It could mean that they're going to do the same thing as Walmart. They're just going to use what they already have. But I think when you're going to use the same employees that you already have, that means you're not anticipating a very good season.
That may be correct. I can understand. I think that's exactly what this is about, because I'm going to guess, and that's all it is a guess, but I'm going to guess that Walmart is going to sit back and they're going to tell their employees, okay, this week we need you for 20 hours or maybe 30 hours, but something small enough where maybe you don't have to deal with Obamacare. But we're going to use you for this many hours this week, and next week if business picks up, we're going to increase you to 40 hours, or maybe even 50 hours, or 60 hours. And the week after that, maybe we won't need you so much, and we can cut you back to 35. It leaves them flexible, and they're not committing. And I'll bet they're doing the same thing with the products that they're buying wholesale to sell in the store retail. I'll bet they're sitting back and saying, taking a wait-and-see attitude to figure out, is this going to be a good holiday season, or is it going to be, you know, a poor holiday season for sales? And they don't know, and so they're just saying, all right, we'll deal. We can either get our employees to work 60 hours, or we can get them work 30 hours. It'll depend on how many customers we have.
And I believe they would also think that hiring, 100,000 people, 60,000 people, that's a lot of cost. And so, yeah, they're figuring, yeah, we can get by without them. So,
well, the thing about it is if you hire that 100,000 people, in theory, you hire them Let's say you hire them this week. Well, they're on there. They're going to be on there for Halloween. They're going to be on there for Thanksgiving. They're going to be on there for Christmas. And presumably, they're going to be working 20, 30 hours a week, however many, throughout the whole Christmas season, regardless of whether they have business or not, where they can take the existing employees. And again, like I was saying, we can put them to work for an extra 10 hours a week or 20 hours a week if we need them. And if we don't, we can cut them back. Still there.
Yep.
They have them in reserve.
Yep.
And they're making enough money where they aren't going to quit, just doing their regular job. And so I understand this is evidence that they're not particularly optimistic about this holiday season. All right. If they really thought it was going to burn, if it was going to, you know, get hot and burn bright, they would sit back and hire the extra 100,000 people, or Walmart would. They said, we're going to make some money this Christmas. All right. And therefore, let's get some more people on the floor and we're going to deal with these problems.
And this kind of goes along also. You have, in the past 2 years, Kohl's hired 69,000 for the season. Target, they plan to hire 100,000 workers for 2017, and that's up from 40% from last year. So I don't know what they think is going on there, but they're planning on it, business being very healthy. JCPenney, we hear all the woes about JCPenney. They're looking to hire up to 40,000 seasonal workers, and their job hiring will begin October 17th. They're going to hold a job fair. UPS is planning to hire 95,000 seasonal employees ahead of the holiday. What's interesting here, as many as 35% of the new hires will be kept on for permanent positions. So again, you're kind of looking like, they'll keep the employees to where they can adjust the hours as needed. Toys R Us,
you're talking about UPS is going to keep 35,000 out of
35% of the 95.
All right. So essentially, they're saying this is going to be a tryout, and we're going to keep one out of three that we bring on for Christmas season. We're going to keep one out of three for full time employment
so
after
that way
the Christmas
we'll get the
season
most,
ends.
That way, we'll get the most out of you if you want a full time job.
Well, that'll be one thing, but the other
better
point.
Better performance.
If they anticipate they're going to keep a third of their of whatever they put on for Christmas, they're going to keep a 35%, a third of them after Christmas season is over. It's evidence that UPS is believes that we're going to see more and more sales over the internet rather than going to brick and mortar stores. And as we buy more and more products from Amazon, they're going to be shipped by UPS or whoever, Federal Express or whoever's handling it. But the point is, you'd have to suppose if they intend to keep 35% on, they're anticipating their business is going to do well.
Yeah, but do you know what I read?
Brick and mortar stores, though, are perhaps going to do badly.
I saw a headline today about Amazon thinking about doing their own shipping like a UPS and FedEx.
Yep.
And if they do that, you may UPS and FedEx, they'll have, I'm sure Amazon would go global too, but it would probably take a little more time. But for local, for the U.S., yeah. So,
the whole thing is interesting.
It
the whole
is.
Thing is surprising. Here's an article from Inc. magazine. And the headline is, "The next recession is coming, and it's set to reshape our economy as we know it." Okay? I don't know what makes them think, is a recession going, is that enough to reshape an economy?
Mm-mm.
Or do you need a depression to reshape an economy? And that's not exactly clear.
I think what you need is a reset of your monetary policy, of your currency. That's why it will never be the same.
This gives us another. It says, it may seem to some that we're still recovering from the Great Recession of 2008, but the reality is that we're nearing our 100th month of expansion at the end of this year. Okay, that's about 8 years of expansion. Mm-hmm. We've been expanding ever since the economy nearly collapsed into a depression around 2008. That's a little like arguing that we've been bathing more regularly ever since our ship sank. All right? We've been in an expansion for the last 100 months. Well, yeah, but you're counting from when you were very nearly plunged into a depression. I don't know, there's a little bit disingenuous. With an unemployment rate of 4.3% and a bull market, at least at this writing, the late summer of 2017 looks like a Goldilocks economy. There's a steady growth that's not too hot and not too cold. Inputs, for example, employees and equipment aren't too expensive or too cheap. But they're saying with an unemployment rate of 4.3%, and I'm wondering, do we really have that? John Williams calculated it was closer to 23%. And even if it's been diminished significantly, when the government said it was 10%, he said, no, it's actually about 23%. Right? Where are we right now? Do we even know, is the unemployment rate really 4.3%? But they make an argument that a recession is coming, but they talk about, so they say successful companies, they talk about companies that survived previous recessions, and they said just 9% of all companies emerged stronger after a recession, 17% of all companies were wiped out by on average in previous recessions. The companies that thrived during a recession didn't cut back the fastest or invest the most, but found a middle ground between cutting costs, number one, to survive in the present, and number two, investing for tomorrow. And they go on, they say successful companies will invest more in artificial intelligence and other automation techniques to permanently replace workers, which could prolong the recession and alter the economy in a lasting way. What they're saying here is if there's a Harvard business study that's being referred to here, and what they're saying is that if the most successful strategy for surviving recessions in the past has been to, one, cut costs, well, we're talking about laying off some workers. That's no surprise. But two, also invest in the future. Well, what can you invest in the future when you're cutting costs? How about robots? Then it would seem certain that the next recession will see a large number of workers being laid off, number one, and number two, large numbers of robots taking their jobs. And the reason that's important is because this implies that the next recession, and perhaps even the last recession, all right, the one that we have allegedly recovered from, but even that last recession, it may result in a permanent increase in unemployment levels. We're going to go into a recession, going to lay people off, but we're going to put robots in to replace them. And when the recession is over, if it is over, the robots are going to have the jobs and the workers are going to be, and some of the workers are going to be displaced. And it goes to what we're talking about, how many people are going to be hired to work part-time or whatever during the Christmas season. And at least in some instances, Walmart, for example, are saying, no, we're not hiring anybody. We're just going to work with what we got. You have to wonder, significant changes are confronting our economy. And the changes are not just economic in the sense of the cost of capital, the wage rates and unemployment rates and the rest of that sort of thing. It's also technological in that the next recession, it may actually foster a permanent increase in unemployment levels. It may foster a permanent decrease in employment of people as they are replaced by robots. So, we live in interesting times, and what are we going to do about it? We're going to have to think about this in ways that we have never thought before. For example, some people talk about universal basic income. We're going to have to give everybody at least you got to start off where everybody's got a basic income in order to get by. Why? Because increasingly, we aren't going to have jobs available for people. It used to be that you didn't have to be all that well-educated. You didn't have to be all that bright. You could still get a job if it was only mopping floors. But we're coming into circumstances where the floors are going to be cleaned and mopped by robots. We're not going to need people who are menial laborers, at least not in a lot of cases. And we're not going to need managers, and we may not even need attorneys. Somebody set up, I think we talked about it on the program last few weeks, some college law school student, I think he's something like second year law school, he has set up a computer system where you can get legal advice, you can get forms and whatever, and they'll tell you how to handle situations, and he can do this without violating unauthorized practice of law laws because he's not charging any money for it. And the result is he has processed several hundred thousand traffic tickets, and they're working on, they're putting algorithms together to work for divorces and income tax and whatever. And this artificial intelligence and robotics and automation, this is finally catching up with us in a way where almost no one's jobs are safe. Right? Almost, this is not just a situation where people who do menial labor are going to lose their jobs. There are going to be a lot of people, there are going to be a lot of managers, there are going to be a lot of employees who are subject to being replaced by robots and or computers. And what, you know, okay, that's great. We're going to cut costs. We're going to have a robot. Robot works for half the price of a human being. Okay, sounds like a great idea. But where are we going to find people to buy our products? If they don't have jobs, they don't have any money to buy products. Great, we cut them out of the, you know, out of the employment loop. We don't have to pay them comparatively high wages. We can make products cheaper. But who's going to buy them if nobody's got jobs that gives them income? Which brings us back to this universal basic income idea that we're going to have to pay people some sort of a basic minimum, even if they don't work. Not just, it's a kind of welfare is all it comes down to, but it's not exactly just welfare. You know, we used to be able to gripe about welfare from the perspective that people who were receiving welfare were lazy, they were taking advantage, they should go out and get a job. Maybe you can't get a job. Maybe you really can't get a job. Significant portions of our population won't be able to get jobs. What are we going to do with them? And these are questions that are going to have to be answered, and not 50 years from now or 20 years from now. These are questions that are going to have to be faced probably in the next election cycle, and I'm in the next presidential election cycle. We're going to begin to address these questions. And we're going to, what are we going to do with the people who can't get jobs? Hire them to abolish the robots? Is that what we should do, Melody? Get a job as maybe I could. It used to be that I could look forward to getting a job as a greeter at Walmart, but now maybe I could be a robot polisher.
Eliminate oil.
I don't greet people because nobody's got any money.
Make oil illegal.
Make oil illegal.
Yeah. Well, you have to squeeze them to grease them to make a move.
Well, it might
be. I guess those are old robots. Those are the robots from the 50s.
Yeah, right.
I-Tobar.
Some people might remember that. It was from Captain Video back when I was a kid in the 50s. TV show, robot named I-Tobar. I remember things like that. There's no good excuse for it. It just clutters up your mind, but there it is. Let's take a break. A couple more commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hello, folks. I'm Al Franken. Hopeless Instrument Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, prices are up, folks. 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. It does come out on Mondays. Monday is Columbus Day. And there was something here in Columbus Day. There was somebody, I don't know who he was. I came across this report, Korean News Service. There's a top CIA official. That ought to concern us, a CIA official. For the Korean Peninsula, warned Wednesday that the U.S. should be ready for a new situation, provocation by North Korea on Columbus Day on October 9th, which coincides with the anniversary of the founding of the political party that governs in Pyongyang. Stand by your phones. Yang Suk Lee, Deputy Assistant Director of the CIA's Korea Mission Center, said while speaking at a conference that was organized by the agency at the George Washington University. So he didn't speculate on what North Korea might do, though they frequently carry out missile launches or nuclear tests on major state anniversaries, such as the birthday of King Jong-un or other dates associated with the lives of his father or grandfather. October 10th marks the anniversary of the founding of the Workers' Party of Korea in 1945. He also added that Pyongyang historically has been controlled by its fear of the Chinese abandoning its support for the kingdom or that the U.S. would carry out a military strike. He says Kim Jong-un no longer has those fears. But he added, the likelihood remains low of a North Korea purposely starting a war with the U.S. or its allies like South Korea. He said the last person who wants conflict on the peninsula is actually Kim Jong-un, adding that Kim, like all authoritarian leaders, wishes to rule for a long time and die in his own bed. We have a tendency in this country and elsewhere to underestimate the conservatism that runs in these authoritarian regimes. But then it was interesting because there was also another comment by or a report coming out that North Korea is to test a missile capable of hitting U.S. West Coast. And I guess Trump had some sort of a meeting with his military. I don't know if it was a dinner or whatever it was, but mm-hmm. He had said this is basically the calm before the storm. So he's supposed to be visiting China soon, I thought. I don't know. I didn't look up the dates prior to the program, but China is on lockdown ahead of its most important meeting in years. They had a Golden Week holiday. It ends October 8th. But the holiday standstill is likely to be prolonged ahead of the Communist Party Congress that starts October 18th. So business has come to a standstill as half of the population travels over a one-week public holiday, but that quietude is expected.
Half of China's population is traveling on the same one for a one-week holiday?
That's what it says.
They Chinese... use that. I mean, they get a spectacular car jams, conflicts, whatever. They put so many cars on the road. They already done. They've had them that are takes them days to unsnarl the traffic jams, right? And now they're going to try to put half the population on the road at the same time?
That's what it says. The
Chinese. It's easier to walk, probably. If I was in China, I'm going to Peking. Going to drive? No, I'm going to walk.
Chinese is going to head back to work and school on Monday. Their country is expected to remain in a holding pattern ahead of a pivotal Communist Party Congress set to start later in the month. Commentators and markets rightly assume that the authorities are consumed by this transaction and that all other policy matters are on the back burner or in lockdown until after the Congress. The once in 5 years meeting will usher in leadership changes that are likely to see incumbent President Xi Jinping extend his term and consolidate power. The coming years of his rule will be critical for the world's second largest economy as it grapples with the fallout from three decades of unbridled growth. He's the most powerful Chinese leader in decades. It embarks on a new era. And there was one point where he says that it is all about the communists. They are looking to make the communist, where did I see that? Stronger. And
make the Communist Party, the communist philosophy
Party stronger. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With more control.
Do you think they can do that without crippling their economy or at least diminishing their economy? I mean, it almost in this country, we see where President Trump wants to diminish government regulation of corporations and thereby free the corporations to perhaps become more prosperous, more profitable. You would have to suppose that one of the fundamental problems with communism is the government has always sought to regulate businesses. And in the former Soviet Union, perhaps that tendency to overregulation helped to collapse the Soviet Union. It certainly played a role in it. China really dare to increase Communist Party power? Can they do it without crippling their or diminishing their economy?
Well, you know, they're talking about how they need to strengthen the control of the Communist Party more than anything else. They're looking for stability is always number one in China, he says. Beijing is going to be very motivated to make sure that the growth, the stability, and everything flows, the news flow, even though they control it. So it could seem that maybe they're seeing signs that there is a little bit of disruption or you know,
well, they're fragile. They've got so many problems. They've got to recognize. You have to know.
And I think
that they are a fragile.
That's my point. They're
nation.
Seeing this, and they want to make sure that they maintain the control and the strength.
But can they? But that's the question.
I think they can.
Can you have an authoritative government that also is favorable, conducive to having a prosperous economy? And I think the answer, history suggests, I don't know where can we point back to where we had a powerful, authoritarian, perhaps despotic, even tyrannical government that was also able to maintain an effective economy, a successful economy. And I don't know that you can point to those very easily.
You can't point to what's going on here in the United States anywhere else. So you basically have two opposing governments, or I don't even know how you.
I don't even know if they are opposing. It's like
perhaps
the Bloods
not,
versus the Crips.
Say
it's not a philosophical issue. It's just a question of territory.
We're supposed to be.
Well, we're going to learn lessons. The world is going to learn lessons. We are going to be invited to follow all sorts of nonsensical ideas, and we see it all the time. But what is politically correct, and we see it advanced by, from my perspective, the left. They're advancing some ideas that often strike me as idiotic. But we're going to find out. We're going to find out if these ideas are good or bad, and we will probably find out in a painful way. Let's try some of these stupid ideas. They've never worked before, but we think that this time it's different. Well, maybe it is, but probably it's not. They probably won't work. There is so much stress in the world that I don't think we can afford to be stupid anymore. In the past, we've had a period of time, really in my lifetime, when we could afford to be dumb. We had sufficient wealth. We had sufficient power. We could afford to play the fool. I think we're getting to a point where that's no longer possible. We're going to have to be smart. And that doesn't just mean the politicians are going to have to be smart. It's going to mean that the people of this country are going to have to get smart and hold the politicians' feet to the fire and tell them, look, you need to do the right thing, not just what works for special interests. You need to do what's right, what's intelligent for the best interest of the vast majority of people rather than for the handful that give money to the congressman and the Senate and maybe the president. So interesting times. We're all going to learn.
I think so.
Yeah, I think we're going to be forced to learn a few things.
And I believe Trump visits China in November, the first week of November. I think he's scheduled. He's going to visit China and South Korea during a five-nation trip to Asia. Yeah, that's when I couldn't figure out why would they allow him to go to South Korea.
Maybe they're trying to get rid of him.
Hey, Donald, why don't you go to South Korea?
Yeah, we can set you up. You can even make a trip. We'll take you up to the demilitarized zone. You can go dance around on the border there and stick your tongue out at the guards on the other side.
There's an Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation Association deal of South Korea that he wants to, you know. So I couldn't figure out why they would allow him to go to that. Maybe his plans will change since this was reported. But I mean, this was just reported last month.
It may be perfectly safe, but it's one of those things. Just say, well, this is strange. This is like Kim Il Sung coming over to. He's going to make it. He can put him in an open air in a convertible and drive down the streets of maybe Chicago or Washington, D.C., and visit the United States. I don't know. Is that a good idea?
I don't know. But, you know. So, anyway, interesting times are coming. Yeah. Dangerous times are coming. And again, we should appreciate every day that is calm, that gives us the ability to plan and prepare, just like, you know, the hurricanes that came and went. You had days in advance, you had notice. A lot of people ignored them, and a lot of people got hurt and lost their lives. But those who prepared knew what was coming, even though they weren't sure, you know, what day it was coming or how they would be affected, they prepared. And they weren't only prepared for the hurricanes that came and went recently. They're usually always prepared. And that's what gold and silver is always about with your finances. You should always be prepared. And I get how attractive the 25,000 Dow is, the dividends that are being paid and so forth. But that system, those numbers are so fragile. It amazes me. I mean, usually when you have the numbers and you're in this bull market, you hear everybody saying, oh, you know, it's going higher. And, you know, all the central players are out there touting the paper markets. Well, these central players are no longer touting the greatness of this bull market. They're out there saying, holy smokes, you know, this is crazy. And they're there to hear, and it truly is interesting to see their comments and the comments about gold. And yet, 300 and some silver eagles were sold last month. I mean, it's just like
300 and some thousand.
300 and some thousand. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But anyway, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And I think I had a call yesterday. Someone says, well, why do I need to buy gold? And I began to think to myself, after we had a very nice conversation and so forth, a gentleman was out of Washington, D.C. He listens to the AM station in that area. And I began to think to myself, it's like, are we not providing the message of why people need to own gold and silver? And so I thought perhaps, you know, maybe beginning next week, we'll put together a series of, you know, why you need to own gold and silver. We talk about the fundamentals of gold and silver. We talk about, but do people know how gold protects them? How is it going to protect you? How does it protect you against inflation? And it really is simple, and it really is not complicated. And but it's certainly history has taught us a lot, and I'd like to touch on some of those things next week.
Well, I can see two reasons to buy it, and I don't know if you want to talk about it now or just in the last 2 minutes of the program.
Running out of time, yes.
I do have something here from Newsweek. King Salman and Putin deals leave the U.S. out in the cold. And this is a story. King Salman of Saudi Arabia will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin this week during the first official visit of a Saudi king to Russia. This visit marks a turn in Russia-Saudi relations. The two countries have not seen eye to eye on the future of Syria, and the U.S.-aligned Riyadh views Russia's relationship with Iran as an unholy alliance. But there's this meeting between King Salman and Putin, this really does mark an extraordinary turn, not just in the relationship between Russia and Saudi Arabia, but more important, a turn in the relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia. They're going to be buying military equipment, among other things. They're making a bunch of economic deals, and they're going to be buying military equipment from Russia. Saudis are. It means that our relationship with Saudi Arabia is no longer as rock solid as it has been in the past. And this is no small thing, because Saudi Arabia, the deal between the United States and Saudi Arabia in the 1970s, laid the foundation for the petrodollar. Saudi Arabia agreed to sell its crude oil only for U.S. dollars. And that's what kept the dollar from collapsing back in the 1970s when we went off the gold standard on the international level. All right, what we're seeing here with Saudis beginning to talk to the Russians is a threat to the petrodollar, which is the foundation for the U.S. dollar's value and strength. And if this goes through, we're going to see some serious trouble in the near future. We can't talk about that any further because we are out of time right now. Maybe we'll talk a little more next week, but I hope you'll tune in on Monday when Millet and I will return to Financial Survival. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.